from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, President Trump and the environment.
I am, to a large extent, an environmentalist. I believe in it. But it's out of control.
That was President Trump on Tuesday addressing a group of automakers on the subject of environmental regulation. A number of environmental rules are already in the administration's crosshairs, including Obama's Clean Power Plan, which would cut emissions from power plants. And meanwhile, the president also signed orders to revive the Dakota Access and Keystone pipelines and directed the EPA to suspend its grants and contracts while imposing a media blackout on its employees. We'll discuss the Trump administration's actions on the environment so far and what more lies ahead coming up after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's opening hour of the Forum program. On his first day in office, President Donald Trump published his America First Energy Plan, a doctrine promising to eliminate what he calls harmful and unnecessary climate regulations and to embrace fossil fuel extraction. This week, the administration began to make good on those promises. Trump issued executive orders to push through construction of the controversial Dakota Access and Keystone XL pipelines and repeated his vow to dismantle Obama's Clean Power Plan, which would limit greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. He also launched what some are calling an all-out assault on the Environmental Protection Agency, imposing a media blackout on EPA employees and directing officials to suspend grants and contracts. This hour, we discuss the administration's action on the environmentalist front so far and what may still be to come. First, we go to Washington and welcome Emily Holden, who's a reporter with E&E News, an energy and environment-focused news organization. And Emily Holden, welcome to the Forum program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
I guess the place to begin is to hear from you about the pipelines, I mean the two pipelines. It's not only essentially trying to shut them down, or get them started, and avoid shutting them down, but also there's been a lot of talk about renegotiating. What is in the wind there exactly?
Sure. So what President Trump did yesterday, he actually sent most of them were more memos than executive orders to agencies. Two of them were to speed review of two controversial pipelines that have really become the face of the climate movement. One, the Keystone XL pipeline, had been rejected by the Obama administration in 2015. The other, the Dakota Access Pipeline, was undergoing a final review, and environmental advocates say that they will fight those with protests and in the courts, but that is certainly going to be harder without support from the White House. Also, to keep in mind, those approvals are going to have to go through at the state level as well. And in terms of renegotiating the deals, industry has sort of said that they're not sure exactly what that would mean.
And we've also, I mean, in the midst of all of this, we have, first of all, there's a lot to get to here because there's a lot has transpired just in the last 24, 48 hours. But the EPA media blanket and the idea that no new contracts or grants ought to come out of the Environmental Protection Agency, plus the blackout itself, this has certainly many people upset. It's a directive to the EPA essentially to do what specifically?
Are we talking about the grants program?
Well, it's actually a directive to have no new contracts or grants, correct?
Yes. And so what was reported initially was that there was a freeze on in EPA's grants and contract programs, which is that accounts for about half of their budget. Late last night, early this morning, we got reports that some emails had been sent to regional EPA offices explaining that that is actually a review that is supposed to be completed by the end of this week, and also that certain state programs that are and funds that are used to basically enact federal rules and federal laws, those are not under review currently.
Well, there was at least a report coming out that the Environmental Protection Agency has been instructed by the Trump administration to remove the climate change page from its website entirely. That's reported by Reuters, two agency employees reported.
That's right. That news came late last night and has yet to be verified by EPA. But the report is that they were told that they should erase pages with climate change information, not just basic sort of educational information, but also perhaps several of the databases that hold data about, you know, which sources are emitting what levels of carbon dioxide, et cetera.
Detailed data on emissions, but also links to scientific global warming research.
That's correct.
And the page could go down, as, according to sources, as early as Wednesday. Recently, NPR spoke with Doug Erickson, the head of communications for the Trump administration's EPA transition team, and reporter Nathan Rott asked Doug Erickson, what was the goal of the Trump administration on the environment? Let's hear.
The focus of the EPA is going to be its core mission, which is to protect the environment and to protect human health.
And does climate change fall anywhere into that?
Oh, we'll be working on many issues within the EPA. So, but we'll be sticking to the core mission, which is protecting the environment and protecting human health.
Get a response from you on that, Emily Holden?
Well, I think you have to really look at exactly what the Trump administration is laying out here. You've also had, in addition to these memos and this executive order that came down yesterday, you have Congress talking about coming back with the Congressional Review Act and eliminating some of the more recent regulations coming from federal agencies on the environment, including methane emissions from the oil and gas industry, a stream protection rule, an SEC rule that has to do with disclosures on mineral extraction. So paired with that and also the cabinet nominees that President Trump has put forward, I think that you have to look really at that record.
Well, let's talk about cabinet nominees, or let's talk specifically about the nomination of Scott Pruitt, former Attorney General of Oklahoma, to head up the EPA. You were at those hearings, I know, and there have been lawsuits against the agency that he's been tapped to lead, essentially initiated by him.
That's right. Scott Pruitt has sued EPA more than a dozen times, pretty much on every major climate or Clean Air Act regulation that has come down recently.
What can you tell us about his ties to oil and gas and allegedly hundreds of thousands of dollars received from fossil fuel companies?
A lot of that is very difficult to track because some of these campaign donations are happening through nonprofit organizations that don't have to disclose them. But there have been many reports over the past couple years that he has been associated with groups that have received large donations from the fossil fuel industry.
And he is a climate change denier, or he's denied being a climate change denier. Where does he seem to stand on that?
What you're hearing from Scott Pruitt and most of President Obama's nominees is more along the lines of, you know, climate change is happening to an extent, but we still need to talk about what the extent is, how much humans are impacting that, and exactly what we want to do about it, or whether we want to do something about it. And that really goes against what, you know, the vast majority of the world scientists are saying, that climate change is an issue that needs to be addressed
and
immediately.
We should say, just for California listeners, that in his hearings he declined to answer whether he would allow California essentially to set its own emission standards exceeding those of federal limits. Let me thank you, Emily Holden, for joining us. Emily Holden, again, is a reporter with E&E News, an energy and environment-focused news organization. Appreciate your being with us.
Thank you.
Let me tell you who else is going to be with us for this hour as we talk about environmental regulations out of control, as President Trump describes it, setting in motion some fairly sharp policy changes. Jeff Homestead is with us from the nation's capital. He's a partner in Bracewell, which is a law and government relations firm serving industry. He was assistant administrator of the U.S. EPA for air and radiation under President George W. Bush, and his name was reportedly at least floating around as a possible head of the EPA. Jeff Homestead, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
We also have David Doniger with us, who's with us again from the nation's capital, director of Climate and Clean Air Program with the NRDC. He was a lawyer for the EPA's Clean Air Program and a U.S. negotiator of the Kyoto Protocol under President Bill Clinton. Welcome, David Doniger.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. And Jeff Homestead, let me go to you first here. Get your response to, well, first of all that's going on vis-a-vis the EPA and the nomination of Scott Pruitt.
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is there's been, I think, a lot of overreaction to some of the things that have happened. Every administration since Ronald Reagan, when they've taken office from another party, has basically put things on hold until they get the lay of the land, until they can make sure that they're comfortable with the things that are being done on their watch. So, you know, that's what President Obama did, that's what President Clinton did, and this is the way administrations have always done it. And so some some of the hysteria from the environmental community, I think, is very strategic because they're trying to paint a picture that's just not true. It's, as I say, every administration, they want to make sure that they know what's going on under their name, under their watch. And they've already clarified that a lot of these things are going to go out in terms of contracts and other things. And so I think we really need to give them a bit more time to get their feet on the ground, to get their people in place, and then we will have a better sense of what their priorities are going to be.
David Doniger, let me go to you on this. I think you would respectfully disagree, I would assume, or what?
Well, I think the big picture here is what the policy direction is going to be, and you can see this in Scott Pruitt's nomination hearings, that he has grudgingly acknowledged that the climate is changing, but not acknowledged that human pollution is the primary cause of that. That our carbon emissions from power plants, vehicles, other industries. And this is true of many other nominees who've been quizzed on the climate question, whether it's Secretary of State nominee Tillerson or the OMB, Office of Management and Budget nominee Mulvaney. They are either denying connections to human anthropogenic emissions to causing this problem or saying, oh, we don't know if it's significant or we don't know if it's important. Basically, what they're saying is they're not ready to act to curb these emissions. They want to roll back the actions that the Obama administration has taken. Now, look, 50-plus years ago, President Johnson sent Congress a message asking for the authority to curb air pollution, including carbon pollution causing global warming. And Congress provided that authority in the 1970 Clean Air Act. And it's finally being used by the previous administration. To have all this rolled back is devastating. And it flies in the face of the overwhelming scientific consensus and the fact that people can see that the extreme weather is getting worse and climate change impacts are happening already, let alone what's in the pipeline for the future. And this latest rumor, admittedly, it hasn't been done yet, but that the EPA team would pull down the climate change websites, it's like burning the library. We know that Scott Pruitt is, the architect or the principal spokesperson of more than a dozen lawsuits against EPA. He's going to come in and impartially decide the future of these matters. It's unprecedented to see a lawyer leading these lawsuits then turn around and become the administrator and switch sides and attempt to fairly represent the other side. This is an unprecedented assault on public health and the environment, and it's unfolding now. And this is not what people voted for. It's not even what Trump voters voted for.
Let me go back. Thank you, David Doniger, to Jeff Homestead on this. This was 2016, the hottest year on record for greenhouse gases, and you spoke about the hysteria of the environmental movement, but many people are really fearful of what's going to happen, not only in terms of climate change, but the education of climate change. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about how the EPA, with a media blackout, can actually disseminate information as it's supposed to do to the public.
I have to say when you asked me earlier about this and I indicated I thought there had been a lot of overreaction and hysteria, I think David just proved that point. And this whole idea that there's a media blackout, again, is a vast exaggeration. Every administration, when they take office, basically say, look, we want to make sure that's when being communicated on our behalf is consistent with what we want to do. That's not a media blackout. That's a time for them to review things. And the EPA website, as far as I know, hasn't changed significantly. In fact, I'm not even sure what has changed and what hasn't. This idea that somehow the library is being burned, again, is ridiculous because there is this data that is publicly available from many, many sources. And so it's not as though, even if they were to do, and I have no idea, I hadn't heard that rumor until this morning. So I think it's important to basically see what they end up doing when they finally have their people in place. And I admire Scott Pruitt a great deal because he has said what finally needs to be said at EPA, that EPA's job is to implement the statutes that Congress has passed and given authority for EPA to implement. I can predict with great confidence that at the end of Mr. Trump's term, air quality will be improved, water quality will be improved, more land will have been cleaned up, and the greenhouse gases will be reduced as well. So this idea that somehow this is, you know, an environmental disaster is just plain ridiculous.
Back to you, David Deniger. Let's hear from you.
Well, I just want to point out for the record that Jeff and I both are involved in some of these lawsuits. Jeff is an ally of Scott Pruitt in these lawsuits, and I have been an ally of the former administration.
Could I just clarify? I want to hear what you have to say along those lines, but the lawsuits that are challenging the EPA on regulations.
Power plant carbon emissions, for example. Right. There are others, too.
Toxic mercury pollution is a whole range of things.
Yes. And so, you know,
but again, Scott Pruitt,
listeners,
a majority of the states are on these same lawsuits. It's not as though Scott Pruitt is leading this charge on EPA. You have a majority of the states who have challenged EPA on these rules. Scott Pruitt has been
right,
involved in that.
You have a majority.
And the courts, by the way, have already stepped in and stayed some of these rules because they think they're illegal, too. So,
all right, I want to avoid crosstalk here. Let me just go to David Deniger on this.
Challenges have been lost.
Yeah, go ahead, David Dunning.
Well, Scott and his fellow AGs and fossil fuel allies have lost most of these challenges and achieved a couple of temporary victories in the sense of a what's called a stay to hold things in place while the litigation proceeds. But he hasn't won anything. And this is a collection of attorneys general who are very closely connected to fossil fuel interests, other industrial interests, very close nexus of campaign contributions and contributions to organizations that help them do these lawsuits. In my view, the companies are renting the state seals and trying to make these polluter arguments look as though they have the gloss of a state behind them. But this is a very tight nexus between the biggest polluters and the Republican attorneys general. And Scott Pruitt has been a leader in this.
Are there, Jeff Olmsted, I mean, certainly there seems to be a kind of momentum to try to overturn environmental regulations, a lot of environmental regulations that came down during the Obama administration. And is there an attempt to also maybe ignore the studies on climate change, tear up what was contracted essentially in Paris, that is, tear up what was done, essentially the legacy, if you will, of the Obama administration and the State Department and intelligence?
You know, on that particular question, you know, what's going to happen with the Paris Agreement, I don't think we have any idea. There's been kind of mixed messages that have come out from various folks in the administration, but that's not going to be Scott Pruitt's decision. What he has said very clearly is he's going to do what EPA is supposed to do, which is implement the laws adopted by Congress. And he specifically acknowledged that that includes continuing to do regulations to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, he's going to do it in a way that is actually consistent with the statute. And one of the,
well, we
one
disagree
of the things
on that.
And one of the things that we've so you know exactly what he's going to do, David. I mean, he has, along with many, many people and virtually all Clean Act lawyers who've been really working on these issues for a long time, believe that the Clean Power Plan was a dramatic overreach and fundamentally inconsistent with what Congress intended. So I do predict that they're going to revoke the Clean Power Plan, which, by the way, the Supreme Court for the first time in history stepped in and stayed because of the legal challenges that had been brought.
Although those battles could go on for years, I mean, where the Clean Power Plan is concerned, but there's a great deal of concern, and I wonder if let me have David Dunninger address this first, just in general. I mean, things that have alarmed people. Yesterday, a national park, the Badlands National Park in South Dakota, was tweeting about climate change, and later in the day about CO2 in the atmosphere and about ocean acidification. Those tweets were deleted. The CDC canceled a major climate change conference that was scheduled next month in Atlanta. These are certainly strange presentiment signs, aren't they? David Dunninger?
Yeah, it's concerning to see these, you know, the possibility, these early signs of a clampdown on information. It's really, again, I go back to what's more worrisome even than that is the disdain that the president has shown and many of his nominees have shown for the weight of the science on climate change. And going back to Scott Pruitt, he brought a lawsuit questioning whether mercury is dangerous, and now he's going to be in charge of implementing the mercury limits.
And by the way, the Supreme Court agreed with his
position. No, he did not. They did not agree on any such question of whether mercury is dangerous. There is a question of whether costs and benefits needed to be weighed in a certain way different than EPA did it, and EPA has gone back and done it, and the regulation is the same as it was, and Scott Pruitt and Jeff and others are still challenging it.
Well, let me do this. We're coming up on a break here, and we obviously have some strong arguments on Trump and the environment. We'd like to hear from you on this, and you know, there's some big questions here, not only about climate change, we've been talking about the Scott Pruitt hearings and nomination, also about the possibility of a media blankout in the EPA and its future, but also renewables. And the whole question of whether we're going to see, well, let me hearken back to drill, baby, drill. And certainly what's happened with the two pipelines, lots to talk about here. I know many of you would like to weigh in, and many of you have questions and concerns which you'd like to air here. So let me give you an opportunity to respond and to bring your voice into the mix. Our toll-free number is available, and that number, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, is 866-733-6786. You can join us now toll-free at 866-733-6786. There are a number of other ways you can become part of this program. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Many ways to join the program. You can also go to our Facebook page. Spoke earlier with Emily Holden of E&E News, and now we have Jeff Holmstead with us, a partner in Bracewell, a law and government relations firm serving industry. He was assistant administrator of the U.S. EPA for air and radiation under President George W. Bush. Also with us from Washington, D.C., David Dunninger, who is director of climate and clean air program with the NRDC, National Resources Defense Council. He was a lawyer for the EPA's clean air program and a U.S. negotiator of the Kyoto Protocol under President Bill Clinton. I'd like to hear from you, so please feel free to join the program. And again, we're talking about President Donald Trump and the environment and what lies ahead. Join us. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, calling for environmental regulations being out of control, President Trump has set in motion some sharp policy changes. We're talking about those. Jeff Holmstead is with us. He's with Bracewell, a law firm and government relations firm that serves industry. And David Dunninger is with us, director of Climate and Clean Air Program for the NRDC, and that's National Resources Defense Council, Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm also inclined, David Dunninger, just to ask you before we move along here and hear from our listeners, if you feel maybe some of the environmental regulations, as President Trump said, have gone too far, and there's maybe need to streamline them. There's also been, you know, criticism of the EPA cost overrides or overruns. Excuse me.
No, I don't think those are valid. The EPA has a track record of producing huge public health and environmental benefits for the American people. When you try to put the dollar values on the benefits and the costs, the benefits hugely outweigh the costs, billions of dollars in benefits, sometimes 10 to 1 ratio over costs. The American people are well served. This is probably one of the best investments that they get, and they get it in the form of less illness, less fewer people getting, fewer people dying, people living longer, and the environment around them being protected. The area that we're at greatest risk is from the changing climate caused by the carbon pollution that comes from our factories and our cars and our power plants. And in the last 8 years, we're beginning to get a handle on that, beginning to get started at reducing those things. Trump campaigned on reversing these things. And
well, he also campaigned on climate change not existing and being created by the Chinese. But that was a campaign.
Yeah. Well, you know, now what we have is sort of a non-denial denial. We have people he appoints saying, yeah, I agree that climate is changing, but we can't tell how much of that might be due to whatever. And they sputter out when it gets to the question of controlling the pollution that's driving this thing. This is not a controversial matter in the science community. The science community is almost unanimous in understanding that climate is changing, the changes are dangerous, and they're driven by the carbon dioxide and several other pollutants that humans are responsible for putting in the air through our industrial activity. I'm not talking about, you know, we all want power. We all want mobility. We all want the things that the modern technology brings us. But we can do it in ways that are much cleaner. And you mentioned renewables earlier. Most of the new power sources in this country over the last few years, the largest amount of that has come from renewable, from solar and wind. We are seeing a dramatic decline in the amount of coal power use. And what you see is the coal industry is fighting tenaciously through this new government to try to protect the position that they once had. And they don't care about what happens to, to your health or mine.
Well, I ought to mention, by the way, that the EPA website, just for clarity's sake, hasn't changed. It's reputed to be changed, reputed to be have been reported to change.
This morning, sorry, there is a report this morning that they're backing down on that, at least for a while, and maybe because of the publicity just in the last evening and overnight.
Well, there's even a report, Washington Post reported, that there may be a march of scientists on Washington. But I want to get to our callers, and I want to get back to Jeff Homestead, if I could. Jeff Homestead, actually, let me read a comment, a couple comments from listeners. Kevin says, I support Trump on this one. Shake down the fake scientists and their ultra-profitable fear and disinformation campaign. There's plenty of room for a real conversation about climate, but the sensationalist hyperbole and conjecture are indeed out of control. And then Bob, on the other hand, says, Homestead's comments are outrageous. No administration throws the baby out with the bathwater in its first week in office. None. Ridiculous. So I kind of put those two together in tandem with one another, because you still have the skepticism about, and I wonder if you share it, about climate change. And when the listener writes about a shakedown of fake scientists, are there really that many fake scientists out there, like, I don't know, fake immigrant voters? Are we talking about something that has been hyperbolized?
You ask a lot of questions in there. Let me go to the second one first. Your caller said that I had essentially lied about what administrations do when they come into office. I would just invite him to go back and look at the history of what prior administrations have done. When they take office, they put various actions on hold until their people can review them. So anyway, I want to make it clear that that's not an unusual occurrence at all. I do think that And one of the things that's interesting to me, what Attorney General Pruitt has said about climate change, and by the way, I know that NPR did a story a few days ago where they said they had gone back through everything he had written and said that they could see, and nowhere did they find anything that would characterize him as a climate change denier. He has said that there is a robust debate over what our policy should be as we deal with climate change, and I think that debate is a healthy one, and I think that will continue.
Let me just corroborate what you said. I believe you're right. I don't think he's on record as being a climate change denier.
Well, he's he's not denied that the climate is changing. He has called into question and said there's robust debate about how much human industrial emissions are responsible for that. And that's really not in debate in the scientific world. And then that leads then to his saying, well, I disagree with EPA's legal interpretations. But what they're really intending, what he's really intended to do through all these lawsuits is block the regulations that curb the pollution. And now he's going to be in, if he's confirmed, in charge of the agency that's supposed to curb the pollution. It doesn't add up.
I want to read another comment from Rick, and then I want to go to our callers. Rick writes, I've been frustrated for decades by the EPA and their behavior toward average Americans. This agency has destroyed the efficacy of many products, from house paint to brass polish and wood stoves, in the name of clean air. This agency attacks petroleum but has no replacement to offer. And here's a caller. Ken, you're on.
Hi. My question is more about, so it seems like there's the EPA is actually backing down. The debate about backing down from leading the charge on climate change science and kind of pushing that agenda forward. What can California do in the absence of the leadership through the EPA to keep the pressure on this really big problem for us as a nation?
Yeah, let me go to you on this, David Doniger.
Well, California has been a leader on clean air and more broadly on environment and on climate for a very long time, and it's a crucial role. There are a number of other leadership states in the Northeast and north of you on the West Coast. And the leadership that these states show in pioneering clean car technology and showing that you can produce electricity that perfectly well meets people's needs with lower emissions, that you can introduce greater efficiency in the use of electricity in our homes and our appliances and so on, so you don't need as much, and therefore you don't need as much pollution. This is huge leadership, and California needs to do it and will continue to do it. The thing of it is, though, most of the pollution from our power plants comes from other parts of the country, which, even though they use less than they used to, are still quite dependent on coal. And states where they have not deployed the energy efficiency technologies and the renewable energy to the same degree as California. If other states would follow California's lead, we would be much closer to solving this problem. And because you can't count on other states to do it, too many of them are politically controlled by, to a great extent, by the fossil fuel industries. That's where the federal government has been so important.
I want to go to more of our callers, but I want to go first back to Jeff Homestead, and I'll give you a totally non-embedded question here, Jeff. It's from a listener named Hannah. She wants to know, is a gag order even constitutional? Can a president tell the EPA not to communicate with the public?
Sure. I mean, I don't think there's any question that people who the president is the head of the executive branch. He has authority to direct the affairs of the executive branch. But let me just be clear. He has not issued a gag order. What they have done in various departments and agencies is said, we want to put a lot of things on hold, regulations, grants, guidance documents, new communications, other things, until we can make sure that we're comfortable with them. So please don't repeat this this exaggeration that there's somehow a gag order.
But President Trump has suggested maybe the EPA doesn't serve the public. Can he? I'm getting a lot of questions like this. This is Dana who wants to know, can he simply dissolve the EPA entirely, as he's perhaps suggested, intimated?
No, and again, this is one of my points, and one of the things that Attorney General Pruitt emphasized in his confirmation hearing. We are a nation of laws. The United States Environmental Protection Agency has been created by statute. It has many obligations that by statute it has to carry out. It will continue to do all of those things. I'm quite confident, as I said before, that at the end of President Trump's administration, air quality will be better throughout the country, water quality will be better throughout the country, and greenhouse gas emissions will be reduced.
And you base that confidence on what, particularly?
On all the laws and regulations that are in place and the other required, the things that EPA is required to do by statute. So the short answer is no, the president can't dissolve the EPA. And EPA has to carry out these statutory obligations, and Mr. Pruitt has made it abundantly clear that that's what he intends to do.
I want to get back to our callers. Been waiting patiently here. Chelsea, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I'm just calling to call attention to a really great project that's being done by people at University of Pennsylvania and UC Davis, University of Toronto, to protect climate data. They're backing up federally available climate data on private servers. And if you're interested in learning more, you can go to climatemirror.org to learn about the project. And they're looking to raise funds to for server space, but it's all volunteer run and just a great way to really ensure that this data is protected if you're one of the many that are concerned about what might happen to it under this new administration.
Well, Chelsea, I appreciate you bringing that to our public attention, and thank you for the call. Let me go to another caller here, and that's Aaron joining us from San Francisco. Morning. Aaron, are you there? Okay, we'll go to another caller, and that is Dan. Dan, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm seeing some dots here that aren't being connected, and my concern is this. Yes, we have an understanding for what's best for the environment, but when you start limiting the information that's out there, specifically the scientific information, and say that it's the EPA's responsibility to enact the rules that concern the interest of our government, that's fine and dandy, but it overlooks the process of checks and balances. If the concerns of our government also favor those of special interests, then are we doing something that is right and just and not just making sure that certain industries make a profit or continue to employ people? The bottom line should be that we're doing the right thing for the right reason and not special interests.
Well, an interesting thought, and I thank you for it, and also an interesting thought from William, looking at my iPad here, who says, how are these executive actions that don't directly benefit Donald Trump? What real estate developer wants environmental regulations? I'm going to go to more of your calls. And let me, before I do that, actually, I'm going to go to some more of your comments. Here's a tweet from Jeffrey who says, there is no greater danger to our community, country, or world than climate change. I'm not sure how, but we must stop the president of the United States. And Paul writes, I like the Donald, but human need should trump corporate greed. Let's not risk another ecological holocaust like the Deepwater Horizon blowout. And here's Curtis. Curtis, you're on the air.
Hi. I was calling to bring up the memo statement that says very clearly a digital strategist will be coming on board to oversee social media. Existing individually controlled social media accounts may be more centrally controlled. And I wanted to see what the opinions were on that, because it's a clear statement that they're not just going to black it out, but they're actually going to have someone overseeing social media.
That language does sound a little bit harrowing to advocates of the First Amendment, Jeff Olmstead. What do you say?
I think you need to wait and see what actually happens. So there is no gag order. There's an indication that, like every administration, they want to be involved in the communications that come out of their administration, which they're entitled to do. So, I'm not on Twitter myself. I don't spend a lot of time on social media. I don't even know how all that works. But I am confident that those ways of communicating will continue to take place. It'll come from departments and agencies at all different levels, but they obviously want to make sure that they understand what the rules of engagement are and who's authorized to say things about which issues on behalf of the agency. Certainly, people can express their own views, and that's protected by the First Amendment. But when someone purports to be speaking on behalf of a department or agency, they normally have to be authorized to do that, and I think that's what we'll see, and that's what we've seen under past administrations as well.
And a comment from Laura, you cannot make air cleaner by lifting regulations that directly affect air quality. And a tweet from a listener, and let me go to you on this, David Dunninger. This listener says, latest Republican ruse, climate change is not a hoax, but there is no pressing need to address it. Scientists say otherwise. We must act now. Fairly, I think, consistent with your point of view, David Doniger?
Yeah, I mean, I've said that already. I want to make one comment about something that Jeff said, which is also something that Scott Pruitt is saying. They tout, and Jeff here is touting the idea that the air will be cleaner at the end of the administration than before. Well, that's not guaranteed. But if they simply stop moving forward, if they simply do nothing, the progress that will come from implementing regulations that were issued in the last 8 years will be felt in the future. So, yeah, the air will get cleaner unless they roll things back. Scott Pruitt likes to claim a lot of credit for things that happened in Oklahoma. It turned out that they were initiated by his predecessor, the prior attorney general. And when you strip that away and ask him, well, what did you initiate that brought environmental progress in Oklahoma, there's almost nothing he can point to.
And here's a caller joining us from New Mexico. Joby joining us from New Mexico. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about DAPL and the stance that the Lakota people have taken there at Standing Rock. They've got a huge camp, and the news just doesn't get out, but the people are still being bombarded with sound equipment. They're being sprayed with water. They're being shot with rubber bullets, and they're being wounded with stun grenades. And these are young people that have taken a stance to fight for Mother Earth. And their battle cry is, water is life. And they're not only fighting for water for themselves, but for the 10 million people that are below the crossing. And the people that are drilling under the Missouri River, they never stopped for Obama when he tried to get them to stop. And the Corps of Engineers told them to stop. They continued to drill, and they were just waiting for Trump to take over and push this thing through. But the Lakota people, their young people are exemplary young people. They're being trained in nonviolence, and they're using prayer, and they're using nonviolent tactics.
I think, Joby, it's safe to say that those battles will go on, especially from the water protectors, and go on against Keystone as well. And I thank you for the call. Let me bring in another caller who's been waiting here patiently. Steve, join us.
Hi. Yeah, I think one of the things that I'd like to interject is, like, Trump is a businessman, and the strangulation of the bureaucracy of the EPA is something that, unless you've actually had to deal with them on getting an approval for developing a product, is just completely mind-blowing. And these things can really hamper the development of small businesses in that, you know, for a relatively benign product that you wouldn't, I won't mention it by name, but that you would never think of requiring 6 to 10 years to get approval. That's only the start of it. Once you've actually gotten approval, the amount of reporting and the amount of bureaucracy that you have to continue to invest in is to me the example of the EPA that is out of control. I'm not so concerned about pipelines, but for the way they strangle small businesses is awe-inspiring.
All right, Steve, good to hear from you. Thank you. And
this is Jeff. Can I just respond to that?
Because Jeff Olson.
I do want to make the positive case for why it's so important to have people in place in these regulatory agencies who do understand that, who just want to make these programs work better. I can tell you, as someone who spent almost 5 years at EPA, that there's a lot of these programs that impose unnecessary burdens, that do very little, if anything, to improve public health or the environment, but make it difficult to build anything, to put new products out there. And I think what this administration is committed to doing is to just making all those things work better, eliminating unnecessary regulatory requirements, making sure that we strike the right balance. Look, nobody wants dirty air and water, but we all should want a regulatory system that allows innovation, that allows people to build and to prosper. And I think that's what you will see, and that's really the goal, not only of EPA, but the other regulatory agencies.
You know,
go ahead, David Doniger.
A lot of myths going on here, and no one's in favor of red tape, but sometimes these things have a purpose, which is to make sure that a new product isn't toxic, that it's safe to use, and there are laws that require these approvals. But I want to make a larger point, and that is the clean energy revolution, which the EPA regulations, the clean air regulations support, is one of the fastest sources of job growth and business growth in this country. There are more people working in clean energy, renewables, efficiency, than there are in the fossil fuel industry. And that's where the future lies. And yet the president and his nominees talk about reviving the fossil fuel industry and stifling the clean energy industries. There's no sense in that.
And I want to read a tweet here. Joshua writes, of course, air and water quality will prove to be better in 4 years, but it will be because of years of action by others before President Trump. And I think it's also safe to say that what we're seeing, regardless of where you stand politically, is an overturning of, well, a lot of what President Obama in campaigning for Hillary Clinton called his legacy. Also, I want to remind you that you're listening to Forum and that we're talking with David Doniger and Jeff Homestead, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED Public Radio, simply go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And I'm going to go to another caller, and that's Wynn. Good morning. You're on.
Good morning. Thank you. I know we're putting a lot of attention on the appointees because they're going through confirmation hearings, and I'm hard to believe I'm going to say this because the Congress didn't do anything for 8 years. But is there any possibility that Congress is going to go along with everything that's going on here, or will they have their own agenda?
Well, that's a big question, and but let's talk about it maybe with respect to what we've been talking about, Scott Pruitt and the Scott Pruitt hearings. There's certainly, David Doniger, on the Democratic side, resistance and opposition to Pruitt, but it's probably, how shall I put this, almost fait accompli that he's going to be approved, isn't it?
There are a number of Republican senators in key states and states where environment is an important voting issue, where they are under a lot of pressure from probably both sides, and it remains to be seen which way they'll go. Scott Pruitt has not come clean about his on his ethics issues. There's a lot of questions been put to him, properly so, by the Senate senators, and they haven't been answered yet. And those things have to be answered before the further steps are taken on his nomination, and we'll see what the answers are and what impact that the answers have.
You want to weigh in here, Jeff Homestead?
Yeah, I mean, I know why David has to say what he said, but Scott Pruitt will be confirmed. Not only Republicans, but Democrats have come out in favor of him. So there's no question, I think, that he will be confirmed.
All right, I want to read some comments here. Alex says, we're witnessing a war on reality and the emergence of refugee data to act on climate. Data needs safe havens. Another tweet from Kelly. Climate change is a red herring to distract from creating the sense of doubt on all science and to deregulate. And Heather writes, I'm curious as to what kind of unified message the Trump administration is trying to create. The only thing that we have consistently heard from administration spokespeople has been a devotion to alternative facts. Can we perhaps, in the closing couple minutes here, get some closing statements from each of you, what each of you feel you ought to be watching and listeners ought to be watching here as we move along on environmental front? Jeff Homestead?
Yeah, now that you've invited me to make a closing statement, I just want to say again, the role of federal agencies is to implement the laws that were adopted by Congress. And I think that's what you'll see from the administration. And within those laws, they made it very clear that they are going to try to reduce the regulatory burden on the U.S. economy and make it easier to build things. Today, even if you're going to build an industrial source that has state-of-the-art control technology, that has the support of the local community, it may take you years and years to get the approval to do that. And there are certain EPA regulations that prohibit the building of new plants in certain areas. I think that's not what most Americans want. They want to make sure that things are being properly built with the state-of-the-art emissions controls, that that the approvals process goes smoothly and fairly. But I think what you should look for is a real effort to reform regulations to make them work better for everybody and to strike the right balance between too much process and red tape and enough time to make sure that you're reviewing these things. And I think you'll see the balance struck in a place that most Americans will support.
All right, final thoughts from you, David Doniger.
Now, these are the code words for rolling things back. Watch out, people, when you hear the word balance and we hear the words red tape. This is the language that is used by polluters, by big industries who don't have the same goals that most people have. I just focus on the fact that polling shows that not only among all Americans, but among people who voted for Trump, overwhelming support for keeping clean air and clean water rules or making them stronger, and for keeping the current climate regulations or making them stronger. And yet this administration is hell-bent on rolling things back. So we'll have to see if that kind of overreach works for them. I would say that it's unprecedented to see millions of people show up on the first day of the administration to express their concern and protest in the way that happened last weekend. People have to keep that up.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. I thank David Doniger, Director of Climate and Clean Air Program for the NRDC, and thanks to Jeff Homestead, who is partner with Bracewell, a law and government relations firm serving industry. They were respectively in the Clinton and Bush administrations. Forum was produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Judy Campbell, and Susan Britton. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. And we get online support from Amanda Font and Jeremy Siegel. Our interns are Stephanie Roberts and Devin Holt. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our executive producer is Holly Kernan. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the program. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.